You're listening to the Marpick Niece Mysteries Podcast. Audio mysteries, fiction, interviews, recommendations, and more. Brought to you by Mademark Publishing and Wondervox, where hearing is believing. Fasten your headphones. Welcome to the next three chapters of A House in the Woods 2, The Devil's Due. Fasten your headphones each week for this episodic supernatural chiller. You can purchase the entire audiobook at various retailers or directly from me. Just visit my PayHip storefront at Mademark Publishing for a deep and deeply satisfying discount. Narration provided by Wondervox. A House in the Woods 2 picks up where A House in the Woods left off. Laurel Calloway is still in the mysterious town of Strickland, New Jersey, where nothing is as it appears to be. 2 years have gone by, and they've been good to the Calloways. Laurel and her husband Jeremy have a new house and a new family with baby Isabel about to celebrate her first birthday. Everything seems perfect until Laurel begins to have dreams. Bad dreams. Something tells her these dreams could really be memories. But of what? Of whom? And of when? Did she really run over a woman in the road at night? Had they once had a dog? Why are these things trying so hard to surface, swimming slowly up from her subconscious? The more she begins to tell the people around her about these dreams, the more convinced she is that they're part of it and that these nightmares aren't really dreams at all. Page after page, the pace escalates as Laurel begins to learn the truth and plot her escape. But will she succeed? The devil is in the details.
Chapter 13. She knew the house didn't look the same as soon as she approached it on the road. The trees that once lined the front of the property, giving the home a sense of privacy, had been cut down, making it seem naked and exposed. It didn't matter terribly, considering how isolated the property was, but the bareness of it shocked her. They'd almost driven past it the first time they'd seen it, hidden as it was behind a row of pines. There was no way anyone could miss it now. Without the trees, it looked stark, as if it had been forced out of hiding and stranded in the open, as vulnerable as a rabbit on a freshly mowed lawn while hawks circled overhead. Laurel chastised herself for thinking such dark thoughts as she pulled into the small, semicircular driveway. She would have to back out. There was an older model Camry parked beneath the house's old wooden carport. She hoped that meant someone was home, but it was possible the couple had two vehicles and one was gone. "You wait here," Laurel said, turning to look at Isabel. The baby was still calm, but not asleep. "I'll be right back." Laurel got out of the car and walked around toward the house's front door. She took a deep breath, scanning what she could see of the house and land. She suddenly remembered telling Scott to stop the car the first time they'd driven by. She remembered his insistence that the owners wouldn't sell, despite the sign nearly obscured by tall weeds fronting an otherwise well-kept yard. She remembered going around back, with Jeremy and Scott following reluctantly behind. She remembered seeing the cat inside when she peered into the large back window. She remembered leaving a note for the homeowner, expressing an interest in the place. She'd been sticking the note on the front door when it had suddenly opened, and there stood, "May I help you?" Laurel nearly jumped out of her skin. The woman who'd answered the door the first time was Eileen, introducing herself as the house's caretaker. Today it was a young woman smiling down at her from just inside the kitchen, speaking through a screen. Laurel walked up and looked through the mesh. The woman appeared to be younger, in her early 20s, Laurel judged. She was quite pretty, in a natural way. There was no makeup, no sense that the woman planned to spend her day doing anything outside of her home. "I'm sorry to bother you," began Laurel. "You're not bothering me," replied the woman. "I was just doing laundry, but who are you?" "My name is Laurel Calloway." She saw some kind of recognition in the woman's expression, but not from knowing Laurel directly. They had never met, as far as she knew. "Maybe she's seen me in town," thought Laurel. "Or Eileen has told her about us. Yes, that could be why she reacted to the name." "I'm Julie LaSalle," the woman replied. "You're a writer, aren't you?" "Ah, of course," thought Laurel. "She knows my name from my books." "I am," said Laurel. "I'm also the person who used to live in this house." "I know that, silly," said the woman, with unexpected familiarity. She opened the screen door. "Come in, please." "Let me get my daughter," Laurel said. Just before turning to get Isabel out of the back seat, she noticed Willie the cat inside. Something about it chilled her. She ignored the sensation and retrieved Isabel from her infant seat. Moments later, she was inside, placing Isabel into her stroller and sitting next to her at the kitchen table. At least that's not the same, she thought. The stove and cabinets remained, but the rest of the furniture she could see was different. She took it as confirmation she was not in a time warp. "Would you like some coffee?" asked Julie. "It's fresh." Laurel could smell the just-made coffee and immediately said yes. She sat at the table watching Julie prepare two cups. "Creamer?" "Yes, please." "I get our coffee from Luther's. It's the best." "Of course you do," thought Laurel. "Of course it's the best." "We do too, actually," said Laurel. "Regular coffee tastes so bland after that." "Why do you suppose that is?" "Secret recipe, I guess," said Julie. She walked over to the refrigerator, and Laurel noticed for the first time that she was barefoot. "I have to admit I haven't read your books," Julie said, getting out a quart of half and half and taking it back to the counter. She poured a generous amount into each cup and stirred them with a spoon. "But they're on my list." Laurel smiled. It was something she'd heard dozens of times. She knew not to believe it or to be bothered by it. "Is your husband at work?" asked Laurel. Eileen mentioned a couple had bought the house. "He's traveling," replied Julie. "Boston for a few days." Laurel wanted to ask what he did for a living, but it could be seen as intrusive. "No children?" she asked instead. Julie brought both cups to the table, put one in front of Laurel, and sat across from her. "We're not quite ready," she said, "but I understand your adorable daughter has a birthday coming up." "How do you know so much?" thought Laurel. "Eileen told me," said Julie, as if she'd read Laurel's mind. "How exciting!" Laurel sipped her coffee, taking very little of it this time. "I wanted to meet you." "And so you have. And so I have." Laurel waited a moment, trying to word her questions in a way that did not come off as invasive. "I was wondering, too, what happened to the Dietzes." Julie swallowed her coffee slowly, her eyes moving slightly to the side as if she were considering her answer. "They moved." "Obviously," thought Laurel. "Do you know where or why?" Julie shrugged. "I don't like to pry," she said, the message none too subtle. Laurel was prying. "So they just sold you the house and left?" "Actually, we bought the house through Scott Dunlop." Laurel was surprised, but knew she shouldn't be. "He said he'd been the realtor for the house before." Laurel caught herself shaking her head. "That's not really the case," she said. "We bought the house from the original owners who'd moved to Philadelphia. We sold the house directly to the Dietzes." She did not add, "as far as I know." Her memories of the sale were foggy, like so much else lately. The one thing she was certain of was that the Dietzes had bought the house and the Calloways had built their new one. "I don't want to speak badly of Scott," Laurel added, leaving out how much she disliked him. "Maybe he had some connection, and obviously he sold it to you." "Obviously. And that's the last you heard from the Dietzes?" "Yes, really. They didn't want to live here anymore. Who knows why? Maybe it's too isolated. Maybe it's too quiet." Except for sounds coming from the basement, thought Laurel, and the barking of a dog. "But they sold, they moved, and they lived happily ever after, we hope." "I wish I'd gotten to know them," Laurel said. "Did they leave a forwarding address or a number?" "Nothing that I'm aware of. You could ask Eileen. She knows everything." "I'll do that," said Laurel. Realizing she was not going to get much information from Julie LaSalle, she began formulating her exit plan. It would be rude to simply get up and leave. Ask her to see the basement. The thought came to her so abruptly, it was as if someone had whispered it in her ear. "You said you were doing laundry," Laurel said. "Is the laundry room still downstairs?" "Yes, The house isn't big enough to move it up here, but you would know that. Laurel nodded. Is there a chance I could see it? The washing machine? The basement? There was a moment of silence that lasted a little too long. Of course, said Julie. I'll go with you. By this time, Isabel had fallen asleep. The cat was nowhere to be seen. It was just the two women alone in the kitchen. They got up from the table, and Laurel followed Julie to the basement door. I remember the stairs. I remember the light hanging from the ceiling. Laurel flipped a light switch at the top of the staircase and led them down. And there it was. That strange archway Laurel remembered, all bricked up as if to keep something out, or to keep it in. I went to a brick. I pulled it out. I saw them staring back at me. Do you hear things at night? Laurel asked, as they reached the bottom of the stairs and walked into the basement proper. Laurel could see the three small windows at ground level were still boarded up. What things? Asked Julie, sounding decidedly less cheerful. Laurel crept toward the brick wall, unaware that Julie had not followed her further into the room. I don't know exactly, said Laurel, scratching sounds. It's an old house. It makes noises. This was more like an animal trying to get out. I haven't heard anything. Or someone with a spoon, digging. We've had mice and a raccoon once. No spoons. It doesn't sound crazy, doesn't it? Said Laurel. Julie said nothing, and Laurel began to think it really did sound crazy. What was she doing here? What did she think she would find? The quiet was suddenly pierced by Isabel's cry. She must have woken up, seen she was alone, and started wailing. It was the perfect excuse at the perfect time. Laurel turned toward the stairs and realized Julie had remained at the bottom of them, staying back while Laurel approached the wall. I'd better go, she said. Once she starts crying, it won't stop. She needs to go home. Julie turned around and headed quickly up the stairs, with Laurel hurrying behind her. Thank you for the coffee, Laurel said, although she'd barely touched it. She turned her attention to Isabel, assuring the baby that everything was fine. Within moments, Isabel stopped crying. She had wanted her mother's attention, and she had gotten it. Kevin and I would love to have you over for dinner sometime, Julie said. You and Jeremy. I can't wait to meet him. Absolutely, said Laurel, all but certain they would not meet again, at least not in this house. We'll touch base. Laurel said her goodbyes and was putting Isabel in the back seat when she heard the screen door open. I think this is yours, Julie said. Laurel closed the car door and turned around. She froze at the sight. Julie stood in the doorway holding a leash, a dog's leash. I found it in the basement in a box the Dietzes left behind. Laurel asked the obvious question. Why wouldn't you think it was theirs? I did. It was the only time I spoke to them after they moved. Mrs. Dietz called to see if our move-in had gone smoothly. But you don't know where they went or why they left. Do you have their phone number? I'm afraid not, replied Julie. She called me. But there are no dogs in Strickland, said Laurel. A dog can smell the devil. Julie shrugged. I never noticed. Holding the leash by her side, she added, She said it wasn't theirs, so it must be yours. Not knowing why she was doing it, Laurel held out her hand. It's not, but I'll take it anyway. Maybe Jeremy knows something about it. The sound of Isabel crying from inside the car broke the moment. Julie handed Laurel the leash, a long red leather strap with a choker chain attached. Laurel noticed a name tag dangling from it. She held it up to the light. Maximum. Who's Max? She wondered aloud. Well, said Julie, whoever he is, he's long gone. Laurel thanked the woman who now lived in their old house and got into her car, tossing the leash on the passenger seat. Within moments, she was driving down the road, a familiar road she'd seen before, several times, in her dream. She came upon a stretch of it not far from the house and knew this was where she'd run over the woman with outstretched arms pleading for help, the woman who wanted her to know it wasn't finished. What's not finished? Laurel said to herself, gripping the wheel as she peered at the empty road ahead. What are you trying to tell me? Isabel began to cry again, and this time Laurel joined her. Chapter 14. What is that? Jeremy had gotten home earlier than expected, which would normally be cause for minor celebration. He'd texted Laurel from work to say he was leaving on time for a change, and she decided to wait and make dinner with his help. It was an opportunity she never passed up. Isabel was napping in her nursery, giving Laurel some quiet time to obsess over the situation. It's a leash, Laurel replied. I can see that, Jeremy said. He'd put his briefcase on the kitchen floor and was standing, hips on hands, by the table staring at a dog leash where a dinner plate would be. But what is it doing here? Laurel was leaning against the stove, her arms crossed. I got it from Julie LaSalle. Jeremy stared at her as if she'd spoken a foreign language he didn't know. Who is Julie LaSalle? She and her husband Kevin are living in our house. Our old house, I should say. What happened to the Dietzes? I don't know, replied Laurel. That's another mystery I may not want solved. Jeremy sighed. You're being very opaque, Laurel. What exactly are you talking about? Laurel stepped to the table and ran her fingers over the red leather strap. I'm remembering things, she said. I think that's what they are. Memories. As opposed to what? Hallucinations. Jeremy tried to put his arms around her, but she maneuvered away from him. I thought I was losing my mind, but I don't believe that's what's going on here. I think you should call Poppy. I don't feel comfortable with her, Laurel said. Jeremy looked shocked by the statement. Since when? She's your therapist. Who has been as dismissive in her own way as you are? I'm not dismissive. Then tell me who Max is. Max who, for God's sake? The dog, Laurel blurted. She picked up the leash and showed the tag to Jeremy. His name is on the tag, and if you turn it over, she flipped the small round piece of metal. It gives the address of the house and a phone number. Whose phone number is that, Jeremy? Can you tell me? If I dial it, our phone will ring. How's that for a clue? Jeremy could barely contain himself. He ran his hand over his face, taking several long, silent moments to consider how to handle the matter. Fine, Laurel. You wanted to know, so I'll tell you, but you should sit down. I don't want to sit down. Then let's both do it. Jeremy pulled out a chair for her, then sat in his own. You had a nervous breakdown, Jeremy said, speaking in a gentle tone, as if she might shatter had he been any firmer. I don't know what you're talking about. Just after you'd sent in the manuscript for the second book. Laurel stared at him. What you're saying is impossible. No, Laurel, it's not. It's hard to describe now. You were catatonic, clinically catatonic for several weeks. I thought you'd had some kind of massive stroke. Laurel could not believe what he was telling her. You're lying. I'm not lying. And I'm not making this up. You can ask Eileen. You can ask your uncle. I'll ask my mother. That's who I'll ask, Laurel said. She started to get up from the table, intending to grab her cell phone. She doesn't know, exclaimed Jeremy. I couldn't have our families telling you to leave. You mean leave you, said Laurel. No. Yes. It's the same damn thing. You were in a terrible state, Laurel. You spent 2 weeks in the Flemington Psychiatric Hospital. They have the records. Laurel felt herself deflating. They have the records. You almost ran over a woman on the road. The woman from my dreams. She's lucky you missed, Jeremy said. It's like you tried to run her over. She could have had you arrested. But I didn't hit her, and I didn't keep going. We had a dog. His name was Max. A dog can smell the devil, Laurel said, dazed by what he was saying. What are you talking about? What happened to Max? Asked Laurel, ignoring his question. He ran away, Laurel. He knew something was wrong and it frightened him, and he ran away. Dogs come home. Well, he didn't, and at this point I'd say he never will. What happened then? after I almost killed a woman with my car and the dog ran away. You went silent. There's no other way to describe it. You were deaf and mute for weeks, two of which you spent in a locked facility. Jeremy reached over and put his hand on hers. She let him. It's the past, Laurel. I knew you'd blocked it out and wanted it kept that way. It wasn't long after that you were pregnant, and this entire episode could add unbelievable stress to you and the baby. I left it buried. Like you left the dog buried, she thought, not knowing why. Was it another false memory? A psychic aftershock? Had everything been a series of aftershocks, radiating out from a traumatic event she couldn't remember? I'm throwing this leash out, Jeremy said, standing up and taking the leather strap in his hand. He walked over to the trash can, opened it with the foot lever, and tossed the leash inside. Laurel watched him, resigned to believing what he'd told her, because there was no other explanation. They have the records. I want to see the records. Was he a good dog? She asked. Excuse me? Max, was he a good dog? It doesn't matter now, but yes, he was a very good dog. Maybe I'm not the reason he ran away. He's gone, Laurel. You're not in the psyche ward. You don't even remember being there. Let's make dinner and get past this, all right? You're a mother now and a successful writer. You've got a life most people would envy. Let's just be happy with it. You're right, Laurel said. I'll call Poppy tomorrow and make another appointment, although I'm not sure how ethical it is for a therapist to keep something like that from her client. It was a group decision, said Jeremy. And who is this group? You and Eileen, and Poppy, and Uncle Martin? Is Luther in this group? Laurel instinctively knew it was time to drop the subject. The more she pressed Jeremy, the more he would insist she should stop. Don't go there, Laurel. Don't dig too deep. You'll find them staring back at you again. Change into something comfortable and help me make dinner, she said, standing up and pushing her chair in. I only kept this from you because I love you, Jeremy said. He kissed her, picked up his briefcase, and headed out of the kitchen. I love you too, Laurel called after him. And everything you just told me is a lie. She went to the trash can, took the leash out, and put it in a drawer. Chapter 15. Laurel stared at the phone, needing to make the call but dreading what she might hear. If Jeremy had been telling her the truth, it meant everyone had kept something monumentally important from her. If he was lying, it meant exactly the same thing. And the people around her were involved in some bizarre conspiracy to keep her in the dark. But what was the truth? Why would they hide it? And what could they possibly stand to gain from Laurel thinking she was losing her mind? You're not losing your mind, she thought. That's what he wants you to think, that you're insane. I'm not a lunatic, she said, steeling herself and dialing the psychiatric hospital in Flemington. She knew they wouldn't give her any information, even if she claimed to be the patient in question. Instead, she'd come up with a plan. After listening to the automated prompts for one department after another, she pressed 5 and waited. And waited. Billing, said a man's voice. She knew if she presented her problem as one of payment, she could possibly get answer. Hello, she said to the disembodied voice. I was admitted there a year ago, and I just got a bill, but it should have been covered by my insurance. Is there someone I can speak to? I'll try to help you, the man said. My name's Sam. Hi, Sam. What's your name, miss? Calloway, Laurel said, guessing he was an older man to have addressed her that way. Laurel Calloway. I need the billing record or your date of birth. Thank God, she thought. She didn't have a record number for a bill that didn't exist, and she didn't have dates of service for a stay she believed never happened. She recited her birth date and listened to him typing it in. A moment later, she got the answer she'd expected. I don't have any record of you staying here. I can't be the only one with that birthday, she said. No, but you're the only Laurel Calloway as far as I know. Maybe I'm wrong, and there are 12 of you, but none of you are in our system. She held her breath, fear making its way through her like thickening blood in her veins. Miss Calloway? Are you there? Mrs. Calloway, she said. My husband lied to me. Excuse me? Nothing, Laurel said, and she disconnected the call. The next number she dialed was the therapist's. After several rings, it went to voicemail. Poppy, this is Laurel. We need to talk. I think Jeremy is trying to drive me crazy. I don't know what to do. I don't want to be here anymore. I'm afraid. Please call. She heard Isabel crying through the baby monitor. She shut her eyes and forced herself to focus. Whatever was happening could not be allowed to interfere with her responsibilities as a mother. Isabel came first. Not Jeremy, not schemes, not conspiracies. Her child. She did her best to put her rising panic out of her mind. She had a daughter to take care of at the moment, and that was all that mattered.
You've been listening to the Mark McNeese Mysteries podcast, where murders on the menu and the screams are on the house. Brought to you by Mademark Publishing and Wondervox.